options reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's been a hot week in technology.
Oh, has it ever?
Very, very hot. This is when you really appreciate the fact that when water evaporates, it cools down.
Uh-huh.
And that's why you get so cool when you sweat.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
I just feel hotter when I sweat.
Oh, no. That's the way your body regulates temperature. When water changes phase from liquid to gas, it cools. It cools your body. And so we're taking advantage of that natural cooling effect. And so I certainly did use a lot of it this week.
I was going to say, I certainly must need to do a lot of cooling down.
No. That's right. Well, this year, BlackBerry's playbook finally got a little good play. It's having trouble competing with the iPad. But there's a little bit of good news for the playbook this week that we'll get into later in the show. Cloud computing is continuing to affect the global job market. And there's been some research on the fact that Google and the way we look up information on the internet is changing the way people think. Actually remembering things differently because of the Google. There was a big change in the MP3 download piracy case recently where somebody got sued for downloading 24 songs and they got a judgment of $1.5 million. This was a single mom, and the judge adjusted that a little bit. We'll get to that later. The website of the week is very interesting, CIO.gov. I love this one. If you want to look at where government jobs are, that would be a good place to look because you can see where the technology is going. And later in the show, we will be talking about the man who started ViewSonic Corporation. You know, the ViewSonic monitors?
Yep.
He actually was a physics major who flunked out of school. So it's an interesting story. He never actually graduated from college.
Sounds it.
But he still built a $1 billion company in the U.S. And the mailbag has been full.
Yes, it has
been very, very full. Now it is time for.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh yes, we have a letter, an email from John. Dear Tech Talk, I feel like I'm being tracked.
Uh oh. Probably are.
I see the same ads all over the place. And they always seem to be relating to what I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my wife doesn't see these ads tracking her around. She sees normal ads on the same pages that I see the same ad. You know, she sees a different ad than I do. These ads follow me around. What's going on? Thanks, John. Well, John, what you're seeing is contextual advertising. Advertisers are sort of tracking what you're interested in, and they'll deliver ads that that you like. And Google is one of the best at it. And there are a number of ways that they deliver these ads. The first way would be they deliver an ad that's related to the content on the web page. So if the web page is, say, a cooking website, mm-hmm. web page, then they'll have paid ads that show up on that site as only relating to cooking because they basically relate to the content on the web page. And so you change and you go to a different web page, you'll see different ads. And, of course, the logic there is if you're looking on a cooking website, you'd probably be interested in a cooking ad.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's one form of contextual advertising that they do. Now, they also have a method of tracking you with cookies.
Yep.
And so they know where you have been because there can be cookies put in your on your computer. And these are basically small text files that are in the in the browser cache area, and then the browser basically, has stores these cookies, and a website can go in and read the cookies, and if they see a cookie from a particular website, they might deliver an ad relative to that website, and there are advertising services around that will do that. So, what you do if you buy that kind of advertising service as a company, you. If somebody visits your site places a particular cookie in their computer. So then when you go to sites that have this, these advertising networks, they see that cookie and they deliver an ad relating to your website. Mm-hmm. So suppose you go to Federal News Radio website and they had a cookie like that. Every place you go, you're going to see a Federal News ad. You're going to say, my goodness, they're advertising everywhere.
Right.
But they're only advertising to your cookie. So that's the other way that they're doing it. So chances are, since you and your wife are seeing different ads as you go along, your ads are tracked to some kind of cookie that you've gotten, some website, and you're getting these kind of sites. You know, I did know somebody that had that problem, and the ads that kept popping up were, I would say, unsavory ads.
I get where you're going with this, yes.
Unsavory ads, which meant that he had some unsavory cookies on his website.
Now, which meant he's been somewhere unsavory, probably.
Yes, that could be. So maybe that's John's problem.
So how'd you get rid of it? I'm just kidding.
So maybe that's John's problem. Well, mm-hmm. You see, you can always clear your cookies. Mm-hmm. So you can actually say...
See, what you do is basically you just toss your cookies is what you do.
Uh-huh. You clear your cookies. You can basically go to... say if you're an Internet Explorer, you go to Tools, and then at the bottom of that menu, there's something called Internet Options.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can go to, let's see here, we can go to content, and then you can basically clear your cookies. And it's quite easy to do. I'm just trying to see where it is here. And
it's okay, it's just a radio show.
I know,
we have to sound like we're...
And so then you just go here to Internet Options, and then you pick the tab there, and then you can... And there's a button there that says... clear all your cookies, clear your history, and you can do that in a snap. And mm-hmm. then there are no cookies to track. Now, the problem is if you clear all your cookies, sometimes you go to websites that you like to go back to, and it remembers your username. And so it's, you know, and there's a lot of configuration information that maybe a website puts onto your browser. And then when you go back to that website, all that information is there, and you don't have to fill it in again. So you lose some of your automatic logging in capacity in terms of the username being remembered if you clear your cookie. Now, this particular kind of cookie is where site A puts the cookie on and then site B reads it is called, you know, is basically a cross-site cookie. So you can actually block cross-site cookies, and you can say, okay, you'll only if site A puts the cookie on your machine, you only let site A read it, but you won't let site B read it. And that gets rid of these advertising cookies. So you can actually set your security up so you don't allow that kind of cross-site cookie.
But you need to be net savvy to do this.
Yeah, I know. It's you can, and you just can go in and just clear your cookies anytime you want. It's mm-hmm. it's really quite easy to do. We got an email from Alice. So what you do under Internet Options, it's under the General tab. I just didn't see it. And it's listed under Browsing History. And when you delete that, you have a choice of deleting your temporary files, your history, your cookies, your saved passwords, and your web form information. Now, actually, this reminded me of one thing. Whenever I'm, say, traveling and I'm at a computer that other people, say, at a hotel business office, and I log in to check my email, sometimes the computers are set up to remember passwords. So I always go into this Tools, Internet Options General, and I just delete all saved passwords.
Yeah.
As well, because you never really know how they've configured it up,
mm-hmm.
because you could go in there, log on to your bank account,
right.
It would save your password, and then some guy just comes in and
bang, you're poor.
Because then he has a history of what website you went to, and it could remember your username and your password and log right in. So I always clear the browsing history and clear everything whenever I'm using a computer, which is not a computer that I control. We got an email from Alice. Dear Dr. Schertz, I'm getting a lot of email bounces to messages that I've never sent.
Hmm.
I mean, this morning I got like 50 of them.
Oops.
Does this mean that my computers are affected with one of those bots? Thanks, Alice. Well, Alice, it's unlikely that your machine is infected. Most likely, one of your contacts is infected, and they harvested your email address from either an email that was in their inbox or from the contact list. And they simply use that harvested email as the return address. And they'll just keep using your email for maybe a day or two, and then they'll switch to another email. And mm-hmm. there's really not much you can do about it. Now, that, by the way, is one reason whenever I send an email out to a group of, say, 50 people. I always put the list as the BCC, blind CC. And I sent the email to myself. So the only thing that shows up on the list is I'm basically sending an email to myself. And all of the other emails are in the BCC field so that they're not exposed.
Right.
Then that way they can't be picked up by these bots.
Mm-hmm.
So periodically you'll get this. I mean, this happens to me about once a year, and I've got to put up with about 2 or 3 days of... You know, of bounced emails, and then they move on to another email address. So, because my email's out there, out and about, all over the place.
Yes, it is.
I get hit with this about once a year.
Mm.
Just don't freak out over it, and you'll be just fine.
So you just let it pass is basically what you're doing.
You just basically let it pass. Dear Tech Talk, I got a new Wi-Fi router. Ooh, he's moving into the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
How do I keep myself safe from my neighbors getting on my network? I guess he's afraid his neighbor's going to try to steal his bandwidth.
Now, why would you be afraid of that?
That never happens. No,
that's
really never happened.
Mm-mm.
No, you know, why would his neighbor not subscribe to internet so that they could steal the bandwidth from their neighbor?
For free.
Yeah, well, I don't know why that would ever happen.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Peter. Well, Peter, congratulations on getting your new Wi-Fi router. Now, when you get these Wi-Fi routers, you basically have to log on to them to change the configuration, and there is a default password built into the router that everybody knows. I can look up all the default passwords. I can go to the internet and look up the default password for any make of any router. So step one, you want to change the password because you don't really want your neighbor to log on to your router.
No.
Using the default password, because then he could change the configuration any way he'd want.
Right.
And then you'd be locked out.
Out of your own router.
You'd be locked out of your own router. So step one, change the password on your router to something preferably that you can remember.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if somebody has hijacked your router already, or if you can't remember the password to your router, there's a little hole in the back for reset. And you take a paper clip and you just push down, and that basically, there's a small switch inside that hole. You push that down, click that switch, and it will reset the router back to the default conditions and
mm-hmm.
go back to that default password in case somebody's hijacked you. So after you've changed the password on your router, then you want to enable encryption. Encryption basically scrambles the signal so nobody can, you know, see what you're actually doing, and they can't really get into your network then if it's encrypted, unless they have the key, it could be 10 numeric digits, could be a 10-digit number. And unless they have the key, they can't get in. Now, you'll typically have three choices on encryption: WEP, which is wired equivalent privacy, or WPA2 or WPA. WPA stands for Wi-Fi Protected Access. WEP has been hacked so many times, people, if they're so inclined, they can basically hack a WEP encryption in probably 20 minutes. So it's not super secure.
Mm-hmm.
So the improved protocol is WPA, which is Wi-Fi Protected Access. The problem with WEP, it wouldn't change the sort of the encryption key packet to packet to packet, and so it would be possible to actually figure out what it was, whereas WP8 rotates through a series of keys, and so it's very hard to de-encrypt it because it's rotating. So WPA2 is much more secure. So you basically set up WPA2, and you put in a key that you can remember. Now, if you forget your key, the only way to get back in, of course, is to use that reset button on
mm-hmm.
the back. And then nobody's going to see what you're doing, and nobody can get onto your system. Now, some people like to even go one step further. They like to do MAC address filtering. So you can only allow certain machines that have a particular MAC address. That's the hardware address, which is baked right into your Wi-Fi connection. And so you could actually look up the MAC address on your computers, and you can log onto the router, and you can see the MAC address of the different devices that are on there, and you can basically say only accept these MAC addresses. Now, I don't really do that, because that means if you have a guest come over, you've got to register their MAC address or they can't log
right.
on, which is kind of a pain in the neck. It's
yeah.
much easier. Somebody comes in with a laptop, you can just type in your password and get them on your Wi-Fi without any problem. And you don't have to touch anything else. There's, you know, these routers have what they call DHCP, Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol, which actually assigns an internal IP address to the computer. Just leave the DHCP settings as they are. That's really not a problem. You might also want to change the name of your router so people don't think realize that you're just not running a default Linksys router. So you could change the name. I would not recommend that you change the name to your address. Change it to something else.
Yeah.
You could also, if you really want to be super secret, you can set it up so it does not broadcast the address. So it's difficult, so people don't know that it's there.
Right.
And so if you don't broadcast the address, it means if somebody wants to log on to your network, they have to know the name of your address.
It's like living in an underground bunker complex.
Yeah, so if you really want to be very, very secretive, you just say, I don't want to broadcast the address. Then your neighbors won't even know you have Wi-Fi, and then your neighbors won't even have anything to try to hack into. I don't think he's got those kind of neighbors, actually.
No, and from what we know of Alice...
This is Peter. This is Peter.
Peter lives next door to Alice, I think.
Yeah, I think Peter lives next door. Maybe Peter does not trust Alice.
If I were Peter, I wouldn't trust
Alice either. That's right.
But this brings to mind, you know, it's been a long time since we had a Cantenna report on this show.
Oh, yeah.
One of your security.
I'm going to have to do that. I actually have this software that I can put on that is loaded on my laptop, and I can scan all of the any Wi-Fi broadcast in the area, and it'll tell me what kind of encryption they have and how they're set up. And I have this antenna, which is actually a Cantenna. It's a can, and so it has a beam spread of about 20 degrees. It's sort of like a flashlight, and I can point this in different directions, and I can pick up Wi-Fi networks about, you know, a few hundred yards away. And so, you know, so if I want to go here and do some scanning, I can scan the neighborhood. Usually I run this thing between my house and the station, and I pick up about 150 Wi-Fi networks on the way.
So, you know, if you happen to see a guy in a white limousine drive down your street with a can hanging out the window, it's probably
Okay, I'll run one of those Cantenna things in the future. The last time I did, Jim, I got a ticket. Because I was running, and I got a U-turn, and the policeman came up, and I had this Cantenna. I had the laptop going. He thought I was some sort of terrorist scanning the neighborhood.
I would think that,
So I survived.
Well, look who just stumbled in.
It's
host emeritus David Byrd.
Yeah, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm kind of shocked you guys even showed up to work because how hot it is.
Well, we're in an air-conditioned studio. Why would that? It's not like we're outside breaking
hot
rocks in the sunshine.
Is the theme of the show today in parallel with what everyone's talking about?
We only talk about hot technology, Dave.
That's
very
right.
Nice. Oh, he ran right to the net on that.
Yes, that's right.
That was a three-point shot.
Bam! Right back at my face. That was very good, Doc. Mm-hmm. Free shirts again, huh?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Well, thank you. When I come to the radio station. I actually always dress appropriately for the radio station.
This guy has two personalities. He's got the big CEO gig, okay, where he's all gray suit and a tie. Mm-hmm. And he comes everything's out the window.
It's Saturday morning.
He's like
cut him some slack.
He's buying stuff at Costco in bags and picking the best out of it. I mean, it really is. It's good stuff.
Is there a reason for your visit this morning?
Well, no, I was just, it's just hot upstairs. You know, hot air rises.
It does,
so
but there's plenty of hot air on the third floor, that's for sure.
I came downstairs to...
to find out about streaming over your video.
Streaming over my video.
Streaming over your video.
And by the way, thanks for those tips on how to get,
voice recognition?
I've got heat stroke. I'm sorry. Voice recognition.
Voice recognition.
And also how to get YouTube videos on a big 52-inch screen with a Wi-Fi.
Did all this work?
Yes, it did.
It did.
It worked very, very well. Good. So anyway, good. Do you have any high tech tips on heat? Like,
what did you get the YouTube on your
on
your flat screen?
On
now, what did you use? How did you do it?
Doc, don't even embarrass me live on the radio like that.
He used one of those cord thingies, probably.
It's a thingy that I connected to the Dubobber that I read off your sheet, and I wouldn't know how to. You know, I had somebody else do it. I gave him the sheet and said,
one of your dogs did it for you, right?
This is what the doc told me to do. Just do this, would you please?
Well, this is the deal. let me just, because
it's your show, I know.
Let me just explain something to our listeners how you can do that.
Okay.
How you can connect your television set to the internet very easily.
I love this. Go ahead.
You know, it turns out that the devices now, if you have a brand new TV set, it's going to have a Wi-Fi connection.
Yes, mm-hmm. It will.
It'll have a Wi-Fi connection, which hooks directly to the internet, and it'll have a web page built into it, and then you can then sign up for Netflix, you can get YouTube, you can get right to the television set.
Sweet.
But many people have a flat screen that maybe they bought 4 years ago.
What do you do for a keyboard?
And it doesn't, one of these? Well, you use a mouse. It's an on-screen keyboard, and you have a mouse.
Oh, okay.
Sort of like the iPad.
Yeah.
But
people are touching the screen.
No, it's not touch screen.
Oh, it's an
iPad with a mouse.
Back away from the TV
set. Yeah.
Look, it's Dale Earnhardt Jr.
So if your TV set does not have a Wi-Fi connection, the nice thing is that all of the Blu-ray DVD players have a Wi-Fi connection.
Oh, wow.
So and so for less than $200, you can buy a Blu-ray DVD.
For $120 at Costco.
Is it 120?
Yeah, Costco.
And it's got a Wi-Fi connection, and then you are on.
Wow.
Isn't that a beautiful thing?
That's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, the other thing is, or if you're more of a gamer, you could get an Xbox, and it has a Wi-Fi connection. You can get on through the Xbox.
Nah, not going there, man.
You can get on through the Wii or the PlayStation 3.
Nah, I'm not doing Wii either.
So did you use the DVD or did you use your television set?
I use the Blu-ray. Thank you.
You use the Blu-ray. Mm. Yeah.
Because you notice if you go shopping for DVDs, which is, I know it sounds dinosaur now, but I do go shopping for those. Everything's in Blu-ray format.
I'm fascinated that you go shopping.
There's no way you can buy the wrong format of DVD. They're all Blu-ray now.
Right. They're pretty much all Blu-ray.
Blu-ray now. And they all have Wi-Fi unless you get last year's model.
Exactly. You can watch a Blu-ray on a DVD machine, but not vice versa, right?
No, you cannot. You cannot watch a Blu-ray DVD on a regular DVD player.
No, it's not backward compatible.
No,
I guess
you're toast.
I am toast.
Everything's gone.
Everything's gone.
I guess I just keep watching The Sopranos on DVD.
Well, you got VHS anyway. It doesn't really matter.
I've got 8-track in the car.
Oh, okay. We're losing the doc here.
Yeah.
Looking at us like, hey, it's my show.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Shut up, you two.
Shut up. Here we're shutting up.
Okay, very good, very good.
Well, listen, I just want to say hi.
Hi, David.
Okay.
And I wanted to give you that. I want to talk about that DVD and Blu-ray thing. So
I know you did, and it's good.
What's the question upstairs this morning? How are you staying cool in the hot weather? Is that what it is?
You are a psychic.
Oh, my God. As you can tell, I haven't been listening.
I have to leave now.
Okay, go get the phones, all right?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, thank you. David Byrd, everybody.
Okay.
Time for us to hit the dusty trail here, too. This is Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we are going to feature James Chu. James Chu is founder and CEO of the ViewSonic Corporation. Of course, this is the corporation that makes those monitors that are very, very nicely priced and mm-hmm. quite a good quality. James Chu was born October 23rd, 1957, in a small town in Taiwan called Pingtung. Chu was the fifth of six children. He has three older brothers and a younger sister. He did not do very well in school.
Actually, we're about to find out.
Yeah, he didn't do very well in school, and you know, he didn't do that well in high school. In fact, he was sort of flunking out of high school. In the 11th grade, he transferred to a private school down in Taipei, and finally made it through. But then when he took his university exams, he did poorly on them. He couldn't get into university. So then he thought, you know, he's going to be drafted because there's mandatory military service in Taiwan.
Wow.
So instead of being drafted, he joined the Army paratroopers in 1977. And he was with the paratroopers for 2 years. Mm-hmm. In 1979, he left the military and he was hired by Duplo to sell mimeograph copiers. You know, his mom was getting a little worried about him.
I'll bet. I'm getting worried. He
was selling mimeograph, and he was very shy. And, you know, you wouldn't expect, wasn't the salesman type because he was kind of a shy guy, but he forced himself to, you know, to be more forward and to talk. And he actually sold three copiers the first month.
Wow.
And
is that good?
Well, I don't know if it's well. Of the other people that started with him, he's the only one that sold any copiers. The other people that started with him that month didn't sell any copiers. He worked at Duplo for a month and a half,
okay.
And then he started while he was working for Duplo. He started studying for his university exams again, and he. This time after about 3 or 4 months, he took them again and he did okay, and he was finally accepted into the Tonghai University, and he majored in physics. He didn't do well in school because when he, you know, they tried to do some diagnostics and they gave him the math exam. He only scored 17 out of 100.
Yikes.
He's not good in math. Well, if you're not good in math, you're not going to be good in physics.
No.
Now, actually, he wanted to major in sociology, but only girls major in sociology, and he was a boy,
so he couldn't
major in physics. So it was like a lot of peer pressure to do this physics thing, and so he just didn't do well, and so he dropped out his third year in school. But while he was in school, he got this idea of selling dictionaries. He worked his way through school selling dictionaries. And he would go into these language classes and he'd make a presentation. He'd sell dictionaries, and he'd actually make about $200 a day selling dictionaries.
Mm-hmm.
Then later on, he started selling English language tapes. He went to ESL school, sold English language tapes, and he was making good money at that. It turned out he was a good salesman. And he was selling so many English language tapes that the government started watching him, and they thought he was like somebody trying to, you know, create some sort of revolution. He was sort of an insurrectionist selling some kind of tapes to these university students. So they told him he had to stop selling these tapes because they didn't really trust what he was up to. While he was in school and before he flunked out, he met his future wife, Lily Huang Lee. She was a night school student now, and she really stuck with him even though he flunked out of school. So in 1983, after he flunked out of school in physics, he moved to Taipei again, and he got a job with a struggling company called Behavior Tech and Computers, BTC. Now, this was only a 3.5-year-old company, and Chu was its 12th employee. He was the first salesman. Now, this company basically sold low-quality keyboards. I mean, and so Chu came in and he said, look, he said, and they were selling them so cheap that
everybody thought they were cheap.
They were so cheap that they couldn't afford better quality components to make them better. So Chu came in and he said, look, he said, people, when they buy a product, they either buy it the cheapest one or the most expensive one. So he said, why don't we just change our pricing strategy and make it the most expensive keyboard?
While it was still a cheap thing.
But I mean, you see, there
but
are.
But they didn't upgrade it.
But no, but there are people. And so they.
The old shell game.
And so he raised the price of the keyboard to make it the most expensive keyboard, and they started selling. But now, because they had enough profit margin, they could actually upgrade the components. So with in 4 months, they were actually selling a high-quality keyboard.
Hmm.
And the people who complained about it from the first batch, they just sent them a good keyboard 4 months later.
Interesting.
Now, so his idea is get a crappy product and charge the highest price for it.
Then when you make some money, then you make a good product.
Yeah.
And then you just send everybody a good one.
It was an interesting deal. Yeah. Okay. By 1984, Chua had attracted so many orders to this keyboard company that they could only fill half the orders.
Wow.
Now, in 1985, Lily graduated from college, and Chu asked her to join him in Taipei, and they got married. She married him even though he was a dropout. Then what he decided to do, he thought that they should move into making keyboards as sort of Mac clones. This was back when Macintosh was allowing clones. They wanted to make Mac clones. They wanted to also sell keyboards to, say, Dell computers and that sort of thing. So he basically took over the BTC USA branch, and in 1986 he moved to Fremont, California to open up that branch, and he had Lily move there with him. In the first month, he sold $1.1 million worth of keyboards in the U.S. I mean, he was, like, just doing great.
He's a rock star in keyboards.
He was a rock star in selling. I mean, he could sell anything. And the thing is, though, the guy that owned BTC really gave him the shaft. Chu had invested $60,000 in BTC when they were actually struggling. Then all of a sudden, with Chu's strategy, they started getting good keyboards. They were selling a lot of stuff. The owner said, you know, really, Chu didn't make that much of a difference. So instead of giving him the 3% stock that he should have gotten, he just gave Chu back his original $60,000.
Nice.
Yeah, and then he fired him. So then here Chu was in the United States. He knew how to sell keyboards. So he formed his own company called Keypoint Technology. And he went to this other company which sold keyboards called Keytronics. You've heard of them. They actually produce keyboards. So he went to Keytronics. He says, I know how to sell. And he agreed to buy all of Keytronics production for the next 6 months. He figured he can sell it. And he did. And so he basically set up this whole company based on keyboards, selling the Keytronics product, and he was doing quite well. He was selling really more keyboards than he did for BTC, but then he had this money. And then he got the idea. He says, look, everybody that buys a keyboard needs a monitor.
Yes.
So then there was this company called Seiko, which made custom monitors, and he wrote some specs for the Seiko monitor. And so every time he'd sell a keyboard, he'd also sell a monitor, and he started selling a lot of monitors with Seiko.
Mm-hmm.
But he decided he should brand the monitor to make it really special. So he created a brand name called ViewSonic. And then he got this marketing company to help him come up with a trademark. And the trademark is a trio of three. That would be a trio.
three of them, yes.
Australian finches.
Hmm.
So if you go to ViewSonic's Wikipedia page, you'll see those three Australian finches there. And then he bought an ad in the PC magazine, and what he wanted to do was target the quality of his monitor to match that of NEC, which was the monitor leader at the time. So he advertised in PC Magazine, and he really a slick ad that looked like this was a high-quality unit. And what's his strategy? Charge high.
Yeah.
So he started selling these monitors really well. And pretty soon he was making enough money that he could actually custom design his own monitors. And he started then developing really high-quality monitors. And so ViewSonic is actually quite a high-quality monitor now. I think it was only maybe low-quality in the beginning, you know, his normal trick. And then he started selling, you know, monitors, and he started taking market share away from these other companies. And he became the top-rated maker of monitors, along with Sony, NEC, Mag, Innovision, and Panasonic. And he soon displaced the rest of these companies and emerged as the largest display manufacturer from America and Japan at the turn of the millennium, around the year 2000. In 2000, ViewSonic acquired Nokia Display Products so they could also sell Nokia products. On July 2nd, 2007, he decided, okay, I'm going to go public. And so he issued an IPO. He wanted to raise $148 million in the IPO. But the market really wasn't interested in him, and they were he didn't think that the IPO would go very well. So on March 5th, 2008, he withdrew the IPO because there wasn't enough demand for his product. I don't think his roadshow was good enough, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still privately held by James Chu and Lilly. The company now has $1.2 billion in sales annually. So here's a guy who basically was a great salesman, started a U.S. company based on production capacity in Taiwan. This was exactly the same story there with Linksys, you see. And so it's an American company using Taiwanese production. So a lot of the low-cost electronics is being produced in Taiwan, but this is high-quality electronics. These aren't just knockoffs. They actually have a great production capability over there. And so that's kind of the strategy. If you want to go to their website, viewsonic.com, you can find out all about James Chu. He's a guy that just wouldn't give up. Even after he'd been given the shaft by his original company, he was able to recover, and he didn't even miss a beat. And he was very, very successful. And I think, and actually I've purchased ViewSonic monitors over the years.
I've seen them around.
It's actually a nice, it's a nice product.
$1.2 billion in revenues this year.
Worldwide, yeah.
Amazing. Well, I can see why I picked Australian finches. Well, because of the color. They're bright birds, and so that'd be a great way to indicate that you've got these crisp colors on your monitor.
You can see the nice color monitors. And it is kind of an attractive logo. I never actually paid attention to that logo until I started studying James Chu.
I had a trio of Australian finches for dinner last night.
Oh, you
They're
did?
Quite tasty,
they
yes.
They are. I didn't know that.
It tastes just like chicken, actually. Thank you for listening this morning. This is Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Hope you're paying attention to what we were just talking about there, Australian finches, because we have a quiz coming up in just a second here on Tech Talk. The number to call is 877-936-9333. Stand by. We will be right back to play the pop quiz.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome to the classroom of the airways.
Yes.
And, of course, if it's a class, you have to listen. I hope you were taking notes earlier in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Go back and review. This is not a closed book test. You can review your notes. That is allowed.
There's no way we could check on all of you.
Yeah, earlier in the show, we were talking about James Chu. He, of course, is founder and CEO of ViewSonic Corporation. And when he set up the corporation, he hired this high-power marketing firm for around $5,000 to help him design the logo. What is the logo that ViewSonic uses when they're marketing their product?
Mm-hmm. If you know the answer to that question, there's one way you can get it to us. And that's not by carrier pigeon. No, no, no.
No.
You need to call us. 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Once again, 877-936-9333.
And if you get the right answer, you'll get two tickets to Fine Dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, or the Kareem Dining Room in Woodbridge. One, of course, is at Tyson's Corner campus. The other one's at the Woodbridge campus. And we are also monitoring the Facebook page.
I was going to say, now for this important announcement from
the doc. I'm sitting here on the Facebook page, the Tech Talk Facebook page. That would be facebook.com/TechTalkOnline.
Mm-hmm.
We were monitoring it last week, and we got quite a few nice comments during the show. And so we're monitoring it live this week. We were testing you. I was waiting to see if anybody would go on here live before we mentioned it. But now that we've mentioned it, we'll probably melt the servers with all the folks getting in on that.
We were
action.
Thinking about doing the pop quiz.
That's
on
right.
Facebook.
Yeah, maybe we'll try
Much
that
to
some.
My chagrin.
We'll try that some. Maybe we'll try that one week. You have to log into Facebook to pass it to win.
Yeah.
BlackBerry Playbook wins the FIPS certification from NIST. Now FIPS stands for Federal Information Processing Standards, and of course NIST is the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Playbook is now the only tablet that has the FIPS certification. Now, FIPS certification is required for all devices used by the federal government. So this clears Playbook to be used by the federal agencies. Now, the problem is nobody really wants Playbook. But if they would want Playbook, it would be approved for federal purchase. It's an Android. Playbook still lags behind the iPad and behind other Android-based tablets in basic functionality. And everybody was complaining about the lack of applications for the BlackBerry. But what they've done to solve that RIM, this is Research in Motion, the company behind BlackBerry, developed an Android application player for the Playbook. So now the Playbook can actually run Android applications, and then they can log on and they can buy Android applications, which actually increases the probability that you'll find an application that you really would like. Did you hear about this download judgment remember last year, Jamie Thomas Rassett was ordered to pay $62,000 for each song that she downloaded illegally. And she downloaded 24 songs. Mm. So she was then required to pay around $1.5 million to the record industry, to RIAA.
We have so much trouble in this country.
She's a single mom. And last week, the U.S. District Court Judge Michael Davis lowered the sum to $2,200 per song instead of $62,000 per song. So the total damages that she'll have to pay have now dropped from $1.5 million to $54,000.
Oh, okay, that's much better.
The Record Industry Association of America accused Thomas Rassett of copyright infringement for a 2006 lawsuit. Now, her defense was that her son actually downloaded the song. She didn't download them.
Mm-hmm.
But the judge actually agreed with the opinion that she had violated the copyright, but he felt that the punishment was just a little extreme. And this is what he wrote in his opinion. The court is loath to interfere with the jury's damage decision. Okay. However, the Constitution and justice compel the court to act.
Mm-hmm.
So he reduced it this last week. In Davis' decision, he made it clear that he supported the jury's decision, but not the damages. RAII should just drop further action on this case.
That's crazy.
Because there's been a lot of research that's shown that the availability of MP3s have actually increased record sales.
Yeah.
And in fact, I was reading last month that album sales were up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because people were learning about songs on the internet. So I think RAII is barking up the wrong tree with this particular approach.
I think you're right. We have a contestant on the phone.
Okay.
Whoops, wait a minute. That's the wrong music. Let's go with this one. A little premature.
This is Joan
calling us from Vienna, Virginia on line one. Joan, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Welcome to Tech Talk. Okay,
thank
Doc,
you.
The question.
Earlier in the show, I talked about James Chu. He's the CEO and founder of ViewSonic. What is the logo for ViewSonic?
Three Australian finches.
That is correct.
We have a correct answer. Joan, you have won Dr. Schertz. Tell her what she's won.
You get two tickets to Fine Dining, either the Escoffier Dining Room or the Kareem Dining Room. Just stay on the line, and we'll get your tickets to you next week out of the mail.
Thank you, Joan. Have you listened to us often here on the radio?
Yes, we do.
Oh, good. Excellent. Well, thanks. Thank you for that. Hang on. Andrew will take your information. And we're going to be right back in just a moment with more here on Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Stand by. More Tech Talk coming right up.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology, and SANS came out with the 20 best jobs in information security.
Hmm.
So that's kind of an interesting thing that they came up with.
There's 20 jobs in that industry.
Well, no, there are lots and lots of. See, security is really where all of the action is. SANS, of course, is sans.org. That's a group of network administrators, and they sort of collect all of their information to sort of consolidate who's attacking what and what the fixes are. It's a great security site, sans.org. So the SANS listing of the 20 best jobs in information security, number one would be information security crime investigator or forensics expert. You know, when they get some computer of, say, somebody, some pedophile or something, and they've got to go in there and they're getting encrypted files and they've got to analyze what was going on. Or a forensics expert might do something like if there's been some irregularities in an audit and maybe people deleted files, they might go to try to find if there's information on there that hadn't been deleted. So you can study what's on the site and try to reconstruct what was there even if people tried to hide it. The number two application will be systems network and or web penetration tester. This is people that actually monitor the sites monitor the network for any intrusion, the intrusion detection. So people that know how to monitor this, because you've really got to monitor for intrusions, and this particularly in this day and age of hacking, you've got to do that. Forensic analyst, somebody that knows how to analyze forensics data, say if there's been an intrusion in the network, and now you've got to analyze, okay, what did they get? How did they get it? Are there any log files available to analyze that? An incident responder is another one, somebody that reports the incidents. A security architect. That's the one that's most interesting to me, the person that lays out the whole architecture for the security plan. The malware analyst analyzes malware. This would probably for a virus protection software. Network security engineer. That's a good one. We actually at Stratford train people to be network security engineers. We also have some classes in forensics and security architecture, a security analyst, computer crime investigator, director of security, application penetration tester, security operations data center analysis. These are all interesting jobs.
Intrusion. Rather specialized, aren't they?
They all basically are applications of the same basic ideas, where you have to understand security, you have to understand networking, and then you simply apply the different elements of either the software or the hardware. And then there are also disaster recovery and business continuity managers. These are all very good jobs. It kind of gives you an idea of where you could look if you're going to try to get jobs or employment in the security area. Now that brings me to the website of the week, the CIO.gov website. I like this website. It's really very well done. This is the official website of the United States CIO. Now, the U.S. CIO position was established within the White House Office of Management and Budget, so-called OMB, to provide leadership and oversight for IT spending throughout the federal government. Each agency has its own CIO, as established by the Clinger-Cohen Act of 1996. But we didn't have an overall CIO, so Barack Obama actually created this position of U.S. CIO. So he's the super CIO. And he appointed Vivek Kundra as the U.S. CIO on March 5th, 2009. Now, Kundra plays a key role of ensuring the federal government is operating, in President Obama's words, in the most secure, open, and efficient way possible. It's a very good objective. He works closely with the chief technology and performance officers. Now, Kundra directs IT policy, strategic planning, federal IT investments, and oversight of technology spending. Now, the thing that's interesting about this site is that it lays out a map and for future developments in government IT, so you can tell where it is going. So he's got sections in priorities, reforms, innovations. It includes a section called Progress in the IT Reform Project. It's an excellent way to understand where the federal government is moving with respect to IT. So if you want to plan what you need to know for future work with the government, either contract work or working for the government, you can go to this site, www.cio.gov. Lots of studies, lots of information, and very well done.
Okay, let's take a short break. This is Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. We have more tech news coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. Cloud computing is changing the global job market in IT. The growth in cloud computing is expected to create 2.4 million jobs in the next 4 years in Europe, Middle East, and Asia, according to cloudtweaks.com. This prediction comes from a report released by the IT company EMC and a United Kingdom think tank. In India alone, cloud computing is expected to increase from 400 million today to 4.5 billion by 2015. That growth could translate into 1,000 new jobs in India, according to the survey. What's actually happening here? You see, we're probably looking at the movement of data center technology moving out of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
because you know the prevalence of internet, you've got bandwidth worldwide, global interconnectivity, so the servers could be located anywhere, and so this is actually a broad shift where data centers are going to move to areas where there's cheaper labor. Now that means that in the U.S., if we're going to be managing these systems in these distributed data centers around the world, security becomes the issue. You got to manage this. You got to manage the security. And so this is why we keep talking more and more about security, because that's where the jobs are going to be as we outsource the actual hardware to the so-called cloud. And really, when we say the cloud, all we're saying is that you have a data center that's located somewhere else, connected to the internet, and that data center might actually have load sharing with another data center. So if a lot of traffic comes in, you know, it basically load shares. You might have multiple copies of your information on the internet, and the load is distributed depending on who's accessing it and when. And because you don't know exactly where the hardware is within this internet work, it's like a cloud.
Right.
That's what they call it. But it's really a form of load sharing and outsourced data centers. Cloud computing is going to totally reshape everything. And for cloud adoption to grow, people are going to need to go where the human resources are, and they're looking at them going into Asia. And how it's going to impact job creation in the U.S. is unclear. I think it's going to move us more to the security area and get us out of the data center business. We already have lost money in the manufacturing technology, like to Taiwan. Jobs in software development, software services are growing, so that's probably where the action is going to go. Google is changing the way we think. Last week, scientists at Columbia University published a report showing that our dependency on Google for information has changed how we think. The study involved a series of tests on how people rely on information, and whether they remember it and how they remember it. And what they discovered was that people were becoming more skilled at remembering where information was stored than the information itself.
Yeah.
They kind of changed the way that they remembered things. And so they could know how to look it up or what folder it was in, but they couldn't exactly remember the information. And so they're actually changing how they remember things. Let me talk about the pet peeve of the week.
Okay.
Email hijacking.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll send a letter to somebody on topic X. Say like, it's a great tree outside.
Okay, I do that all the time.
Yeah, it's a great tree outside. And so then that email sits there for a while, and then later on they'd like to email back, say, hey, I'd like to buy some tomatoes. So they respond to my email that says it's a great tree outside with regarding at the top. It's a great tree outside. And they put in their email, I'd like to buy some tomatoes. Well, my email account threads all those together. So if I look at it, I say, well, let me see, where was that tomato email? Mm-hmm. It's going to be under the thread that said there's a great, let's buy a green tree outside. And so I can't find the email because it's got the wrong subject. That's called email hijacking.
Uh-huh.
So what you want to do is create a new email.
It's called laziness.
And you create a new title that's actually related to the subject that you're trying
content to
send back.
Yeah.
So that is my pet peeve of the week.
You're not the only one that gets upset about that, and I can understand it because it's sort of a lazy thing. I mean, people view these emails as a stream of consciousness.
And what happens is with Google, it threads them together if they've got the same title. And the new Outlook 2007 that we've got there at Stratford, we're not at 2010, we're still 2007. It mm-hmm. threads them together.
Mm-hmm.
So it links them together by subject. And so then I can't find the hijacked email. So that is the pet peeve of the week.
I have the same problem, but I'm also guilty of this thing.
Oh, I haven't seen a hijacked email from you yet, Jim.
You won't now.
Well, time is almost up. I'm telling you, we love your emails.
Yeah.
Send us your emails to techtalk@stratford.edu. And next time, we're going to remind you to monitor. We're going to be monitoring the Facebook page all during the show. We'll remind you right at the beginning. You can leave comments about it by going to facebook.com/techtalkonline. And make certain to go to Stratford University, stratford.edu. Check out our programs and let them know you heard about them on Tech Talk.
This program will be rebroadcast at 5 p.m. today.
Learn more about Stratford University Program's consumer information by visiting their website at www.stratford.edu/content_programs.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or